Accession number 30649, Mr. Ted Hill, Reel 13. Now, after the fishery protection finished in September 54, what happened then? What's the next thing you remember on the Cockatrice?
Well, I was an LSM leading stoker mechanic, acting leading stoker, because you do a year as acting, and if you're okay, they confirm you. Well, I was still an acting, and I went back into barracks.
Straight away after that?
Yeah, straight after the Cockatrice. You always go back to barracks.
So you finished the Cockatrice in September?
Yeah, back into barracks. And I was... they were very short of POs, petty officers, stoker POs. And they took me back to barracks to do the POs course, which was 3 or 4 months on St. Mary's Island, which was part of the dockyard. And I went in in November, the beginning of November, and I was confirmed straight away as a leading stoker mechanic because I couldn't do the POs course as an acting.
So hang on, you got that? Did you have a bit of leave then? Because you left one in September and start the other one in November.
No, I went in. Oh, sorry. I left the Cockatrice in September, and I went into barracks in September.
Right, gotcha.
And I was there till November. And I think they notated these dates because on the 13th of November, I was confirmed as an LSM, which qualified me to do the POs course. And I was there then until February 55 doing the POs course, which was back to school. Technical subjects in the classroom and some practical work in the workshops, you know, hands-on repairing, making things.
Anything new, or was it stuff that you already knew?
I'd done that because I was... I did 2.5 years of an apprenticeship in engineering before I went in, so there was nothing new that happened. I mean, all the intricacies of Admiralty 3-drum boilers and the automatic feed water systems on boilers, which was a big thing, and they made a big thing, and you had to know it backwards to pass this course. And I did very well, actually, because I was already into the accelerated advancement business. But I did exceptionally well on the POs course because over a certain percentage, and it was, passed the MTE course with 74.3%. which qualified me to be a mechanician candidate, which you can go through to a commission on that route. But you had to do the mechanician's course, which was 2 years at school in Portsmouth, I think the mechanician's school was. And you came out, you were virtually the same as an ERA. Different name, but... and the ERAs tended to look down on them a bit, but a mechanician was the same as an ERA, and you could get a commission through that route. The stumbling point for me was you had to sign on for long service to do the course. And I was a 7 and 5 man. Well, as soon as the results came out, I was wheeled into the commanding officer's office at St. Mary's Island, and he was a famous bloke called Lieutenant Commander Broadbent. Everybody knows the name.
What was famous about him?
He was a bastard. He really was. God, he used to chase the sailors around. Well, they were all leading hands, but he used to chase them around, chiefs and POs. He was nothing to him. He'd have a go at anybody for anything. Anyway, he had me straight in the office with, there was I think there was three of us on my course, and there was about 20 odd on each course, and three of us passed for mechanician, and they wheeled us in one at a time to sign on to do the mechanician's course. Whether it was a feather in their cap or his cap, but I was the last one in. And I found out later the other two had refused to sign on. And I decided I wouldn't sign on, and I wouldn't do the mechanician's course unless I was a PO. Because I had something in my mind that if I did the mechanician's course and failed, I could be back as a leading hand. So I wanted to be made PO and confirmed as a PO, which was another year, before I thought of doing the course. So I refused to sign on for him. And he had all the papers there on his desk to do it. And he went absolutely spare. He raved and ranted at me, but I held firm and said, you know, when I get ready for, if everything goes okay, I probably will sign on to do the mechanician's course. So we left it at that, and I'm back in barracks. But I've just remembered something. That period before I did the PO's course, which was, I was in barracks from September to November, and I didn't start the PO's course until November and finished February 55. Now, during that period, I was a leading hand or an acting leading stoker in barracks doing barracks duties. And they wanted, there was a big exercise going to go on in the Atlantic with the Americans and NATO ships. And they were short of a leading hand on HMS Grenville, which was a full conversion frigate from one of the old wartime destroyers. And I was loaned to it for 3 weeks, I think it was. Doesn't appear on my papers.
That would be October-ish.
Yeah. I was loaned to it for 3 weeks, 3 or 4 weeks, for this exercise. And it was based in Portland. So I had to go down to Portland and join the Grenville. And we went out to sea, and, oh, it was terrible. I mean, they'd converted these wartime destroyers by building up the superstructure and putting more structure on. Although they used a lot of aluminium, it was still a lot of extra top weight. And this ship, the Grenville, it rolled like, oh, it was terrible. I mean, I wasn't sick, but I felt ill all the time we were at sea on it. It really rolled. And I thought, blimey, I hope I don't get a draft to Portland. The Portland Flotilla, because there was about, I don't know, half a dozen of these ships down there. I didn't know it at the time, but they wasn't all full conversion. Some still looked like destroyers, but they hadn't built all the top weight on. But they'd classified them as down to frigates. But after the PO's course, when I did pass for mechanician and that, I was back in barracks, and it wasn't long in barracks. It was the same month. It was the next day, actually, from when I went into barracks. Now, I finished the course 22nd of February, 55. The 23rd of February, 55, I was drafted to the Tyrian.
Now, how do you spell that?
T-Y-R-I-A-N. HMS Tyrian. And where was it? It was part of the Portland Flotilla. And I asked at the time not to go. I said, I don't mind going on any ship you like, but I don't want to go to Portland on the one of these converted. And they told me it was only a part conversion. You could hardly tell the difference between a wartime destroyer and the Tyrian, except they'd put on these depth charge is that they fire them ahead of the ship, over the top of the ship.
Is that the Hedgehog or the equivalent?
Yeah, that was it, the early ones. So I joined the Tyrian, and I was on the Tyrian from the 23rd of February until the 27th of September, 55.
That's not long.
No.
Now, what was she like as a ship? What do you remember of her?
I remember the engineer officer, who was a lieutenant commander, and he had a five-barreled name. Two of the names were Bowes Lyons, the same as the Queen Mother, because this bloke, he was, 23rd or 24th in line for the throne of England. You know, he was on the fringes of royalty. You know, he was related to the royal family. And he was an absolute pig to the blokes. Oh. And it unhappily comes...
Now, in what way? Give us some examples of what he'd do.
Well, at the time, engineer officers had to do upper deck duties as well. They were sort of broadening the scope, I suppose, for career officers. So he would do officer of the day. And he used to do things. One I always remember, when you went ashore, the Liberty men used to line up on the iron deck and be inspected by the officer of the day. Well, one day, and it was a Saturday, we were going up to London on a short weekend because they used to hire coaches from Portland to Victoria for weekends. And we all fell in, and the engineer officer came up to inspect us, and everybody groaned. And he inspected us, and he picked up, about half a dozen blokes for silly little things, you know, specs on the uniform and all that. So he said, right, this is not good enough. I'm going to re-inspect you. So you can all go downstairs, you can polish your shoes, back down to the mess deck, that is. You can polish your shoes, brush your uniforms, and I want you in full dress, wearing medals. Now, that's totally out of order, but you couldn't say no. So us who had medals had to go down and put our medals on, make sure they were polished and all this, and back up and be inspected. He'd do things like that. Or another instance I remember with him, they had to be able to manoeuvre the ship. So when we went to sea every day, we used to go out with our own submarine and chase the submarine and that. And they used to let the engineer officer and the supply officer have a go at handling the ship. You know, they used to chuck something over the side and he had to manoeuvre the ship alongside it. And he did it and he made a terrible mess of it all. And when we came back into harbour, he stops the leave that evening for the engineering department, the whole department, and he cleared lower deck of us, and we all on the upper deck, and he laid into everybody, because it wasn't his fault he couldn't get the ship alongside, it was us in the engine room and boiler rooms not taking heed of his instructions, which was a load of rubbish, because it's all recorded, but everything he ordered is recorded down the engine room, you know, what they call the engine movements. But he was that sort of bloke. Now, when I joined the ship, I'd just finished the PO's course, but they were desperate for POs. The roster was dry, which means if you pass for PO, you'd be made virtually within a couple of weeks. So I applied to do the PO's the PO's fleet board. You had to do a fleet board to be recommended to be promoted, and you'd appear before three or four engineer officers, and they would examine you on various aspects of, you know, boiler rooms, being a PO in general, but mainly the technical side. Well, I applied, and he had me up in his office there was a little engineer's office. Right, you can't, I'm not going to pass this through because I don't like acting POs on my ship in my department. So, blimey, how do you get around this? Well, this was...
So you were just a leading leading seaman mechanic?
Leading stoker mechanic.
Stoker, sorry, I didn't mean yeah. You. Carry on, sorry.
So I waited, and was it? Yeah, February. I joined in February. It wasn't long till Easter. An Easter leave came where you all have 2 weeks leave. Well, it so panned out that the engineer officer went on the first batch, and I was still on board, and I was on the second batch. When they come back, I go. So while he was away, the chief ERA took over engineer officer's duties. So I quickly put in another request to do the fleet board for POME, POSM, Petty Officer Stoker Mechanic. No, we'd changed by then. We were LMEs, from not leading stokers. We went, they changed the ranks, and I became an LM, a leading mechanic, brackets, engineer. So I put in to do the fleet board for acting POME quickly. The Chief Tiffy passed it through because we were under Osprey, which was at the end of the jetty from us in Portland. And within 2 days, I had a date for the fleet board, which was a couple of days after. So I went and sat the fleet board, which according to this, I passed on the 22nd of July.
55. Yeah. That doesn't sound like Easter.
Good. No. No, I did it in May, actually. May 55, and the paperwork all went through, which took time, because that goes through the Admiralty. But anyway, I did it and passed it before the engineer came back off leave.
So what were you now? Are you a leading...
Well, I'm still a leading, an LME, leading mechanic engineer. And on the 22nd of July, the paperwork came back from the Admiralty, and I was made an acting POME against the wishes of the engineer officer, who didn't try and stop it, but he didn't help it at all. But I had to see the captain to be promoted, you know, and he was a very nice bloke. But not, they used to tell us he wasn't very happy to have this engineer on board who, you know, had so many strings he could pull. Because they were both lieutenant commanders. So I was made acting POME, and he had me again in the office to say that he still didn't want acting POMEs on his ship, in his department. And he would be removing me as soon as possible to somewhere else, you know, off of his ship. And that happened. It took a couple of months, but I left the Tyrian in September. Now, I was promoted in July, August, and I left in September. Back to barracks.
Now, hang on. What was life like on the Tyrian, other than this awful engineer officer?
It was great, lovely, lovely ship's company. Yeah, I mean, you get...
What were your duties like? Or were they just the same? I mean, you know.
No, my duties on there as a leading hand, I was in the engine room. in harbour and at sea. In harbour, I was leading hand of the watch, and I was based in the engine room where there was a generator running if the boiler room was flashed up. And the boiler room was always flashed up because our role down there was anti-submarine, you know, doing practice and exercises all the time. So we used to go out every day, you know, I think something like 8:30, we would slip out to sea with a submarine, and we had our own submarine. Do exercises all day.
What kind of exercises? Well, you wouldn't be your business, would it, in there?
No, but what they would do were hunt the submarine. And if they found it, they would try and get near it and drop a hand grenade over the side, and that was simulated a depth charge. And that would be a kill if they got near the submarine.
So you were just... So what were you actually doing in the engine room? Just the usual thing of monitoring the dials? Or?
Yeah, I was in charge of the auxiliary machinery, like the turbo generator, and keeping an eye on the evaporators that the stoker was... There'd be a stoker there. And attached to the engine room was the gear room, where the massive great gearboxes were fed from the turbines and the propeller shafts from there. And there was a stoker in there, and I used to keep an eye on that he was doing the job, recording all the temperatures every hour. No. But it was more like a civilian job. You go to sea in the morning, you're back at 4 o'clock, because leave was from 4:30 in the afternoon. So the boilers, they would shut down one boiler and keep one auxiliary overnight, and then early next morning they'd flash up the other boiler ready to go to sea again.
What was accommodation and conditions like on a ship?
Same as every other ship. We slept in hammocks. We
were
general messing, same as the Belfast. But so it was a smaller ship. I mean, it was more... seemed more crowded than the Belfast, because in those days they had about 200 blokes on these destroyers. I mean, they do now, but the destroyers are about three times as big. But I remember I spent the summer of 55 down there, and it was great because our run ashore was into Weymouth, where, you know, it was packed with holiday makers. And I remember being on the beach one afternoon. We must have had a make and mend for something, because one afternoon we were in and the ships were out practicing, and suddenly people started screaming on the beach and running up, and a practice torpedo came up the beach. And those old torpedoes were enormous things. And the practice ones, the nose of it was painted bright red. So when they fired them at sea for practice, when they finished their run, which was, I think, about 6 or 7 miles, they would stop and float, but they would float upright. So the big red end was sticking out the water so you could find them. But this thing came up the beach in Weymouth and it cleared the beach. I mean, red for danger is the thing. But they were painted red so you easily observed them at sea. But the people didn't know this. And the other notable thing I remember, we were running a scheme that our submarine... each day, two blokes from the submarine would come onto the Tyrian, and two blokes from the Tyrian would go on the submarine, and they had like a roster for this. It was voluntary. And one morning we were getting ready for sea, and there was a great big panic alongside the... I think it was HMS Forth was the submarine depot ship. And our submarine, they had an explosion, and it sank alongside. Quite a few people were killed on that. of course, we didn't go to sea that day. But I remember it. They raised it with what they call camels, which are like sealed barges, and they sink them either side of the submarine and put heavy cables under the submarine. And then they pump these barges out, these camels as they call, and it lifts it to the surface. And they towed it across the harbour. I actually saw this. They towed it across the harbour and beached it so they could get in and sort it out. And I forget the name of the submarine. It must be recorded somewhere. But an incident. Portland Harbour was a bit jinx like that for sailors, because HMS Illustrious in 1948, I think it was, a fully laden Liberty boat with about 60 sailors on was going across the harbour, and it was very rough and it capsized, and most of these blokes were drowned. And they were fishing bodies out for days, because old Bob Blackwell, who you interviewed last, he was there. He was actually on the Illustrious, and he was part of, you know, fishing the bodies out. And they're all buried on the graveyard on Portland Bill, which is like a giant hill. Which was another thing we used to do on the Tyrian. If you were duty weekend and you were stuck on board, for something to do, a bit of sport, we used to go up on the bridge of the ship, and they had these massive great binoculars, which were fixtures. They had a cover on. We used to take the cover off and look up the hill at the courting couples in the grass that passed the time away. And another thing we used to do, when it got dusk in the harbour, we all had a porthole, or we shared a porthole, and we used to fish out of these portholes. We used to get a light on a wandering lead and hang out the porthole, and it used to attract the fish, not mullet, the ones that go after feathers, mackerel. The harbour used to swarm with mackerel. And on Sundays, Sunday evening, we were allowed to use the galley. I don't know why, but we were. So we used to catch a couple of mackerel, clean them up the galley and cook them, fry them. And we'd be eating them, you know, about 20 minutes after you caught the thing. So you couldn't have them fresher than that. And I remember one of the ships which was there, it was the Grenville, actually, the one I was on for 3 weeks. Because I go to the RNA now at Romford, and the bloke I sit with was actually on the Grenville when I was on it. So we've got that sort of attachment. I mean, we don't remember each other, but we were both on. But he was telling me recently they got a lobster pot from somewhere, and they dropped it over the side one weekend, and they forgot about it till Sunday night. And they went and fished it up, and he said it had a giant lobster in it, an enormous thing. And they pulled it out, and they didn't know what to do with it. So one of the chefs was on board, and he looked at it. He said, "Well, I'll cook it for you for a share." So he cooked it, and the stoker's mess on the Grenville had lobster for that. For their Sunday evening tea time. But there was lots of activities like that went on. I remember the regatta. They had a Portland flotilla regatta. And all the ships participated. And the main things were pulling, you know, whalers, which were rowing boats. They had five oars, racing against each other, and used to race for the cock of the fleet, and you know, the winner's got a little trophy in the shape of a cock.
Did you take part or just watch?
No, we had a stoker's team.
Were you in it?
Yeah, blinking hard work. I tell you, rowing them blinking great things. We never won, but we enjoyed ourselves. And part of it was evening booze-ups and cocktail parties for the officers on various ships. But one of the things we used to do